I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we're going to talk about a new story. Over in the UK, London has elected its first Muslim mayor. The first Islamic mayor of the city of London has been elected. No sooner did this happen than you had people on the internet who were sending tweets, etc., that said, hashtag London has fallen, okay? Making reference, kind of taking the title from the film that's out, which I have not seen. But the idea that London has fallen now, they're calling it Londonistan, that it is being Islamicized. Now, it's interesting, a number of years ago, I was actually going through the camera log of our interview with Dr. Jack Mormon that we did back around 2008, right around there, somewhere in 2008. Dr. Jack Mormon, who is an American missionary stationed in London, and he's been there for a number of years. That's where we did the interview. You see part of his interview in A Lamp in the Dark, and you're going to see more of it in Bridge to Babylon. But Dr. Mormon, at that time, said that there were approximately a million Muslims, about a million Muslims living in the greater London area. Today, it's reported that that number is about 1.3 million. Okay, 1.3, according to the according to an article just posted by the Gatestone Institute on the election, because Khan, who's the new mayor now, he got about 1.3 million votes. And they point out that he got a number of votes that's roughly equal to the Islamic population of London. Now, there's a total of about 3 million, a little over 3 million Muslims living in England right now. A little over 3 million. And so they're still a minority group, but their numbers are growing. They have a high birth rate. And they have a soaring immigration, especially now. Here in this article from the Gatestone Institute that says, meet the first Muslim mayor of London. At one point it says, quote, a Muslim man with way too many extremist links to be entirely coincidental is now the mayor of London. Okay. Goes on to say, quote, the native English are a demographic minority and a rapidly dwindling one in London, whilst Muslims from Pakistan and Bangladesh are a rapidly expanding demographic. So you have the headquarters of the United Kingdom is being flooded with Muslims. Now the new mayor is a Muslim. And he's not just he's not a moderate Muslim at all. You go study this guy, Sadiq Khan. You go study him. And in fact, I'm going to play a quote here from a UK politician named Paul Weston and what he had to say about it. And we'll listen to a little bit of his description of Sadiq Khan. But he is a very outspoken Muslim. He has all of these Islamic extremist connections. And now he's the new mayor of London. It should be very interesting to see what happens if there is an increase in radical Islamic activity there in the city of London, if there's an increase in the rate of sexual assault against women in the city of London now that he's mayor. Very interesting. After Barack Obama became president, there was, within the first 2 years of his administration, there was a 22% increase in HIV among young men aged 13 to 24. So the fact that there was a someone who was being called, because President Obama was openly called America's first gay president. That was a headline at one point. That encouraged more homosexual behavior that then led to this rise, a sharp spike in HIV among young men in particular. Then when Obama overturned Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, there was a spike, an increase in sexual assault by the homosexuals against men in the military. Okay? So whenever these groups, these radical groups that hold to these alternative ideas, especially if they are depraved, morally depraved, there is often a spike in their depravity and their ungodly behavior when one of their own is somehow or other elected to an office of power and they feel that now they're being unleashed, as it were. They can do whatever they want to do. Will that be the case now that Sadiq Khan is the new mayor of London? Although he's using, now that he's elected, all this kind of unity speech and we're all going to come together and I'm going to represent everyone, et cetera, he's saying, those are the things that he's saying, but what's actually going to happen? This should be very, very interesting. But here are some comments. I want to play some comments from Paul Weston. Paul Weston, now just so you know, is a UK politician. He was part of UKIP, the UK Independence Party, which is Nigel Farage's political party over there. But he is today, he is, he's the leader of the Liberty GB party. And I don't know what GB stands for. Oh, Liberty Great Britain. It's got to be Great Britain, right? It's got to be Great Britain. Why wouldn't it be? Yeah, Liberty Great Britain or Liberty GB. Okay. And he is the chairman of Liberty GB. So he's a UK politician and he offers some comments on this new election and the election of the first Islamic mayor of London. Here's what he said.
So Sadiq Khan is now the mayor of London. What sort of man is he? He took his oath on the Quran. So he puts Islam before before his country. His brother-in-law was a member of Hizb Tahrir, and apparently Sadiq Khan is related to four members of a proscribed extremist organization. One of his aides, Shoaib Salah, had to be eventually fired for writing about killing Jews. Sadiq Khan worked for Liberty Civil Rights Organization, which included at that time Azad Ali on its board. Azad Ali wanted to kill British soldiers. Sadiq Khan has represented the Nation of Islam's Louis Farrakhan. After Louis Farrakhan said, "We want to kill all the whites." Sadiq Khan has represented Ali Dizai, the corrupt Muslim policeman who went to jail for perverting the course of justice. Sadiq Khan has represented Baba Ahmed, a terrorist linked to Al-Qaeda. Sadiq Khan has represented Sheikha Ammar, who toddled off to Syria with a false passport, obviously to do some charity work, according to Sadiq Khan. Of course, he didn't. The British intelligence want to know about him. Sadiq Khan represented Yusuf al-Qaradawi, who is wanting to kill Jews around the world, stone homosexuals to death and adulteresses to death. Sadiq Khan's represented the Muslim Council of Britain after they were dropped by the Labour government for being basically linked to the Muslim Brotherhood. He has been on press TV in Iran calling moderate Muslims Uncle Toms because they are not proper Muslims, because they're moderates. He shared stages repeatedly with Muslims calling for the murder of Jews and for the takeover of the West.
Okay, right there. sharing stages with those calling for the murder of Jews and the takeover of the West. The takeover of the West. That's what this is about, brethren. This is about the takeover of Western civilization. That's what it's about. And it is the agenda is very advanced right now over in the UK. It's really advanced in France from everything we're being told. It is moving forward more and more in the other countries of Western Europe, even though you've got people who are resisting it. And there is no question that the same agenda is at work right here in the United States. I mean, this is as though Karl Marx and Muhammad got together and they decided to partner on subverting the Western world and taking over all of these countries. Because there's no question that your left-wing liberal socialists are working to advance the cause and the authority of Islam in Western countries. There's just no question about it. And the media, the socialist media, of course, their response, you can go online, read the articles about this, and they're accusing everybody who objects of being a racist and a bigot and xenophobic, Islamophobic, all this other kind of stuff, because they have any concerns about a Muslim mayor who is now going to be in charge of London, and who knows what that's going to look like. Who knows what that's going to do? This should be very, very interesting, especially when it's this guy. This guy, sworn in on a Quran, has all of these radical connections, people that he's represented, presumably. In fact, this comment goes on from Paul Weston, and he talks about how Sadiq Khan claims that he represented these people, he's associated with them, because he works in civil rights, okay, defending people's civil rights, and these are the people that he had to defend, etc. But of course, Weston points out that he's always defending a certain kind of client, and they all seem to have these connections to radical Islam. So, I wanted to draw attention to a book that was published back in 2006 called Londonistan, How Britain is Creating a Terror State Within. How Britain is Creating a Terror State Within. Now, this is a book that was written by British journalist Melanie Phillips about the spread of Islamicism or Islamism in the United Kingdom over the past 20 years. Okay? And the book here, according to a review, encompasses a critique of multiculturalism. That is the term there, because that is the socialist part of the socialist agenda, this multicultural approach. Now, I'll never forget listening to Brigitte Gabriel talk about this. And of course, she's from Lebanon, a Christian woman from Lebanon, and talked about how the whole multicultural movement was at work in that country, and it encouraged all the Muslims to be brought into Lebanon right before they started a civil war. And I think there's no question that Islam is pursuing authority and advancement in London. There's no question they are there to infiltrate and ultimately take over England, and if possible, the entire United Kingdom, if they can. That is why they're there. And it's so painfully obvious. I mean, this, you know, the globalist movement has been called an open conspiracy for years. It's been called an open conspiracy, and it really is. You watch what's happening. People know what's going on. You got Muslims walking up and down the street, holding up street signs saying Islam will dominate the world. England will bow to Sharia, or signs that basically say Sharia is going to take over the UK. So the warnings are there, and yet nothing is done. If anything, the agenda only seems to move more and more steadily forward. And the reason I think this is such a danger for these countries to be playing games with Islam this way and why it's somewhat different from what went on in Nazi Germany. What happened in Nazi Germany was you had a political movement that took hold, but it took hold among the German people. The ideas behind National Socialism in Germany, many of these were ideas that the German people were not familiar with. This idea that Jews are genetically inferior, these ideas of, you know, the racial dynamics, the whole concept of the Aryan super race, et cetera, and so on, and eugenics, and it's just stuff that they were not familiar with. And so it was a political movement. Once the leaders were taken out by the Allies as a result of World War II, then the people could be restored, because Nazism was not really inherent in the German people. The German people had a much longer history of professing Christianity. You had Protestant Christianity there, but you also had a very large Catholic population, but variant forms of professing Christianity. And of course, we know that there were elements of the Inquisition that were being employed by the Nazis. We know that. The Jewish ghettos, the yellow badges that the Jews were made to wear, all of that was being done by the popes through the Middle Ages against the Jews. But in time, with the overthrow of the Nazi movement, the people could be restored to the more traditional, charitable, Christian values of the West, generally speaking. That could be done because they were still the German people. And the other countries of Europe that were affected by it, they're still Europeans. So you could restore them to sanity, as it were. Now, however, they're bringing in an entire foreign population. And many of the Muslims who are there, a high percentage of them, are born outside of the UK, outside of Europe. They're coming from these Muslim countries. And the problem is that whenever this happens, when this has happened to Christian countries in the past, like with the Sudan, like with Egypt, etc., what happens is the Islamic population will eventually overwhelm the native population. And because they tend to be more aggressive and more adamant. And right now, that's what's happening. The Muslims are much more aggressive in England than the English are. Okay, and that's why they're making these advances. And what happens is, if they have an opportunity to seize power, they will seize power. And then all of this tolerance that's being given to them, in return, they don't give tolerance to other people. So if they get power and control, they will keep it, and they will think nothing of shutting everybody else out of their system. All right, let's go to a commercial break. When we come back, we are going to talk about, an article here that kind of continues this idea from Breitbart on why Donald Trump is winning, 9 facts about Islam the media doesn't want you to know. We'll talk about that when we come back right after this.
Dullam Films presents Dark Clouds Over Elberton, the true story of the Georgia Guidestones, a dynamic new documentary exposing the environmental agenda. In 1980, this granite monument was erected by an anonymous stranger who called himself R.C. Christian. He claimed to represent a small group that wished to usher in the Age of Reason. Sometimes called the American Stonehenge, this strange monument is said to contain the 10 Commandments of the New Age, or the 10 Commandments of the Antichrist. It calls for global government, environmental control, and worst of all, it says to maintain the world population under 500 million people. But who was R.C. Christian, and does his monument have something to do with the climate change agenda of the United Nations today? Find out by ordering Dark Clouds Over Elberton, the true story of the Georgia Guidestones.
available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Christian Film Ministry, Adalam Films presents A Lamp in the Dark, the untold history of the Bible. Enter into a world of saints and martyrs battling spies, assassins and wolves in sheep's clothing. A Lamp in the Dark unfolds the fascinating history, the Bible, and the lives of the saints who fought to preserve it. This exciting look into the times of valiant men of faith, such as John Wycliffe, William Tyndale, and Martin Luther, is a must-see for any follower of Christ. Share with your church, your family, and friends the untold history of the Bible today. Now available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
If you want to understand the times through the lens of a biblical worldview, get answers to important Bible questions, or be involved in intensive Bible study and research, then check out situationroom.net/join. You can now join for just $7.99 a month and have instant access to the radio and television programs of Brannon House, Mike Gendron, Mike Abendroth, Mike Riddle, Justin Peters, John Whitcomb, Jimmy DeYoung, Jesse Johnson, Susan Heck, Chris Pinto, John Leffler, T.A. McMahon, Michael John Beasley, David Farnell, and Tommy Ice. Many of these programs are exclusive to the Situation Room and are produced and or distributed by Worldview Weekend from our radio and television studios in Memphis, Tennessee. Our goal is to help you defend and proclaim a biblical worldview. So why not go to situationroom.net/join right now and look at what is waiting for you as a member. This is broadcast quality, biblically sound, on-demand content for the entire family. Situationroom.net/join. Join now, and we'll send you 20 Worldview Weekend DVDs as our way of saying thank you for becoming a member or for renewing your membership. That's $300 in free DVDs shipped to you free of charge when you join at situationroom.net/join.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Thanks for staying with the show today. We're going to talk about Trump's campaign and his comments on Islam and why he's getting so much support from patriots, from, quite frankly, Americans who are fed up with the establishment. And this situation with Islam in the West, I think, has a lot to do with it. In fact, all the statistics show that it has a lot to do with it, because there is a very high percentage of people who agree with Donald Trump's call for at least a temporary ban on having Muslims come into the United States. I was reading an article the other day from an informed writer who was among those who argue that all Muslims should be banned permanently from coming into the United States. And I thought that it was a very interesting perspective. If you think about it, why are they coming into this country? Why are they coming into any country? They're coming into these countries to find ways to advance the cause of Sharia. They're not coming to be a part of the American dream or the European dream or anything like that. They are going into these countries specifically to subvert them and try to convert them to Islam. So it's interesting. There are a lot of Americans out there who openly believe that they just shouldn't be allowed to immigrate to our country at all. All right. Now, I've talked about this before, the role of the Vatican. There is an article that somebody posted on this Catholic cardinal. And here's an article that says, quote, "Senile or satanic, Catholic cardinal declares Muhammad a true prophet of God." And talking about the former Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Catholic Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. And so he is one of those, and I've heard other Catholic priests do this, where they claim that the God of Islam is the same as the God of the Bible, which of course is completely untrue. It says Catholic Cardinal Theodore McCarrick offered Islamic religious phrases and insisted that Islam shares foundational rules with Christianity during a September 10th press conference in D.C. Quote, "In the name of God, the merciful and compassionate," McCarrick said as he introduced himself to the audience at a meeting arranged by the Muslim Public Affairs Council. "That praise of the Islamic deity is an important phrase in Islam, is found more than 100 times in the Quran, and is akin to the Catholic prayer, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." Okay, so that's what the article says. This is obviously an apostate, completely apostate position. But it, when I saw the article, I thought, you know, this takes us back to what I have strongly come to believe, and that is that Rome and her Jesuits have everything to do with this flood of Islamic immigrants coming into the West. And I think Vatican Council, too, has a lot to do with it. Now, if you study the whole history of immigration, what happened was after World War II, Europe was severely damaged after World War II because of all the bombing. Then America went in to help, came up with a Marshall Plan, and then the rebuilding of Europe happens. What they did is they needed a lot of workers to do the construction work. So what happened initially was they were importing many thousands of workers from these Islamic countries to come in and basically help do construction work because they needed laborers. And so that's kind of how it began. Then you have Vatican Council II that happens in the 1960s. And in Vatican Council II, the Vatican goes out of its way to give the impression that Islam is somehow or other a religion that is compatible with Christianity, as though Islam and Christianity believe the same things, generally speaking. In fact, you can go online and you can read, there's an article, well, there's a website, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, an article that says Vatican Council and Papal Statements on Islam. And this is from Second Vatican Council. It says, quote, "But the plan of salvation also includes those who acknowledge the Creator in the first place among whom are the Muslims." In the first place among whom are the Muslims. "These profess to hold the faith of Abraham, and together with us they adore the one merciful God, mankind's judge on the last day." So notice the plan of salvation also includes those who acknowledge the Creator. Now that could be interpreted a couple of different ways. Are they saying that Muslims, according to their own faith, are saved or will be saved? Is that what they're saying? Okay. So then it goes on. There's a big long statement there. And says, "The church has also a high regard for the Muslims. They worship God, who is one, living and subsistent, merciful and almighty, the creator of heaven and earth," etc. "They strive to submit themselves without reserve to the hidden decrees of God." The hidden decrees of God. "Just as Abraham submitted himself to God's plan, to whose faith Muslims eagerly link their own." Now, that statement is a complete betrayal of the gospel. Because Paul says in Galatians chapter 3, you read Galatians chapter 3, Paul says very clearly that God had before preached the gospel unto Abraham, saying, "In thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." The seed of Abraham is Christ, according to Paul's same letter of the Galatians. He saith not seeds as of many, but as of thy seed, but unto thy seed as of one. Okay? Not of many, but as of one, and unto thy seed, who is Christ. Christ is the seed of Abraham. But they don't believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. They don't believe that. So they don't believe the gospel. Scripture says very clearly, those who have the Son, they also have the Father, but he that does not have the Son, neither does he have the Father. Just because they claim to believe in God, even claiming to believe the God of Abraham, the Jews claim to believe the God of Moses and the God of Abraham. The Jews said to Jesus, we have God as our Father. And Jesus said, no, your father is the devil, and the lusts of your father will you do. So just because they made the profession, that of itself was not somehow or other a confirmation. They rejected Christ. They rejected Jesus as the Messiah, even as the Muslims reject Jesus as the Son of God. And they reject his death on the cross as the atonement for sin. They reject that because they reject his death on the cross, they also reject the resurrection. They also reject that Jesus is Lord of all, but rather they've made Muhammad Lord of all, and the Quran, and so on. So it is a very, very different faith. Saying that they're submitting themselves to God's plan, well, how can they have submitted themselves to God's plan when they reject the gospel? Okay. All right. So this is important here at the end. This is still, we're still reading from Vatican Council II, which says, quote, therefore, the church reproves, obviously the Catholic Church, therefore, the church reproves as foreign to the mind of Christ any discrimination against people or any harassment of them on the basis of their race, color, condition in life, or religion. Now, this is 1965. All right, so you see how the way that they are presenting Islam, I mean, this has wrought great confusion in the West. This is the reason why so many people are deceived into thinking, and I've heard it on and off for years, people claiming that, well, oh, Allah is the same as a God of the Bible. You know, the word Allah is the Arabic word for God. You know, this is what they'll say. And they don't realize that God is not God's name. God is a title of authority, like Lord. And it would be similar to saying that, well, der Führer, the word Führer is the German word for leader, and then concluding that Adolf Hitler is the same as Abraham Lincoln, because they were, you know, Lincoln is a leader of America, and Hitler was der Führer, and that word just means leader, so that must mean Hitler and Lincoln are one and the same guy. Obviously, that is not the case. And it's really an absurd argument once you break it down, particularly when you have Allah telling you that Jesus is not the Son of God and openly denying the gospel, denying the crucifixion, declaring that anyone who believes in the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, is ascribing partners unto God, unto Allah, and the Quran says, whosoever ascribeth partners unto Allah shall suffer the flames of eternal fire. So, if you believe in the triune God of the Bible, according to the Quran, you'll be condemned. Clearly, these are gods that are diametrically opposed to each other. And no, they're not the same God, clearly. But there's been much confusion, because now you have the Vatican making this declaration, and that confused a lot of people, because a lot of people see the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church as kind of the head of Christianity. That's how many, especially for people who are not really Christians, they see it that way. Okay? So it can have a lot, it has had, there's no question, it's had a lot of influence in people's lives. And of course, we oppose it, and we have to keep opposing it. And people are discovering now, no, Islam is not the same as Christianity. They're seeing the kind of havoc that is wrought by Islamic culture when you allow Islamic culture to come into these countries. All right, so here's an article, the article I wanted to get to on Breitbart, that says, Why Trump's Winning, 9 Facts About Islam the Media Doesn't Want You to Know. 9 Facts About Islam the Media Doesn't Want You to Know. I'm just going to do a rundown. This is an article. It says, quote, here are 9. Well, it says this, quote, Islam's problem is not a few bad apples. Islam has been infected with a disease that is spreading and metastasizing. Thankfully, most Muslims have not been infected, but when you realize how many are, you understand that this is unlike any other threat we have ever faced, and that to compare Islam to white Southerners or some other such PC nonsense is just another part of the media's cover-up. And there's no question, brethren, that the socialist media, the corporate-controlled socialist media, is flat-out lying to Western civilization and then accusing anyone who's concerned about Islam. People are seeing beheadings. They're seeing women who are being gang raped. They're witnessing all of the chaos, the mayhem, the bloodshed of Islam, the threats, death to America. They're saying, they're chanting death to America. They're saying things like, we're going to drown you all in blood, etc., etc. These kind of things that we've heard for years now. And we're being told by the media that if you're concerned about it, you just have Islamophobia. You just have xenophobia, meaning you have an irrational fear that doesn't make any sense. That's what you're being told. Through the media. That's why I say it's not a matter of reporting or just a matter of opinion. It is systematic deception. Systematic deception. All right, so the article goes on, says, here are 9 inconvenient facts about Islam Democrats and the DC media don't want you to know. Number 1, American Muslims are 5,000% more likely to commit a terror attack. It says that, quote, Muslims account for only about 1% of the U.S. population, but account for about half of terrorist attacks since 9/11. That means Muslims in the United States are about 5,000% more likely to commit terrorist attacks than non-Muslims. Number 2, ISIS is already everywhere in the United States. That's what the article says. Goes on to say, quote, even with our smaller Muslim population, we have trouble keeping track. The FBI is reported to have nearly 1,000 active probes into ISIS supporters in the United States. Of those, 48 suspects are under intensive 24/7 surveillance, straining the agency's capacity. So that's number 2. Number 3, 51% of American Muslims back some form of Sharia. 51%, about half the Muslims in the country, back some form of Sharia. Now, I have come to believe, brethren, that it is the advancement of Sharia that is the real concern. Political Islam. Dr. Bill Warner, go to his website, politicalislam.com, and watch his presentation on this, because terror attacks happen quickly. Of course, obviously, they are a problem. They're a danger, etc. But if political Islam comes in, if they gain the upper hand and bring in Sharia, then you're basically going to have the systematic demoralization of all non-Muslims, because that is what Sharia is. It's intended to either forcibly convert the infidel or to humiliate him and demoralize him systematically so that he will either leave or be killed. Okay? Through jihad and jihadi attacks. Because what happens, like in countries like Nigeria and the Sudan, you've got these systematic attacks. You'll have Muslims that will just go run down to a local church and burn it to the ground. You know, kill the Christians that are in there, burn it to the ground. But it's the result of the influence of Sharia being there in a country, and the Muslims having control of the government. I watched a video a few days ago that took place in Turkey, I believe in Istanbul, but it was in Turkey, and there was a Kurdish Christian man who had a table out, and he just had some, he was trying to take up money, collect money, to help Christians who were persecuted. And of course, this is, Turkey is a Muslim country. And so this Muslim man walked up to him and said, I want you to get, and he just looked like, he wasn't a police officer or anything, he was just a regular citizen. And he says, you've got 5 minutes to get this table out of here. We don't want to see this table here. And he says, if this table's not gone in 5 minutes, he says, you'll pay for it with your life. That's what he said. Within 5 minutes, the guy didn't leave. The Christian guy did not leave. Half a dozen Muslims came running from out of nowhere. And not police officers, just regular citizens. And they kick over the table, they grab the guy, and they start assaulting him. That's the problem you will have if Islam gains the upper hand. All non-Muslims will be subjected to this kind of treatment continually. And then when you go and try to appeal to the authorities, and now the Muslims are in charge of the police, and they're in charge of the government, and they're in charge of everything, and you go and you tell them, well, I was just standing out here with my table, minding my own business, and these, you know, half a dozen Muslims came and they beat me up and threatened to kill me, etc., and the police are not going to do anything about it. When a non-Muslim woman is raped, she can go report it, but if she's reporting it to the Muslims because of what they believe in Sharia, and the kafir, the infidel, doesn't have any rights, they're not going to do anything about it. This is why I say Sharia is the greater danger, because it completely destroys a free society. If you are not a Muslim, if you're a non-Muslim, then your freedom is exterminated systematically. All right, let me go. I'm going to go through quickly the rest of these on this list. Number four, a quarter of American Muslims are comfortable with violence. A quarter, 25%. It says, quote, even more troubling is the fact that nearly a quarter of the Muslims polled believe that it is legitimate to use violence to punish those who give offense to Islam by, for example, portraying the Prophet Muhammad. 25%, one in four. Number five, disturbing percentages of the world's Muslims support ISIS. Number six, disturbing percentages of the world's Muslims support suicide bombings. 34% or 9% or 42% or 8% or 70% or 39%, I guess these are the various statistics, of the world's Muslims view suicide bombings as justified. So whatever it is, a significant percentage believes they're justified. Number seven, only 81% of American Muslims agree that violence against civilians is never justified. All right, now they make the point. They say, quote, there are millions of Muslims in this country. This means that hundreds of thousands of American Muslims are in some way comfortable with the idea of using violence against innocent civilians. See, now that's a big difference where Christianity is concerned and where America is concerned. Harming innocent civilians who are just minding their own business, that is not something we believe in any case. I mean, nobody believes that. All right, number eight, quote, disturbing percentages of the world's Muslims back Sharia law. Says throughout the various regions of the world, anywhere from 12% to 84% of the world's Muslims back Sharia law. Only in southern, eastern Europe and central Asia is this number below 64%. All right, and number nine, quote, America admits thousands of immigrants from countries where Muslims favor Sharia. America admits thousands of immigrants from countries where Muslims favor Sharia. Now, see, this apparently was not the case with immigration prior to the end of World War II, because it used to be we would not permit immigrants to come into the country from parts of the world where the worldview of the people was so dramatically different from what it is here in the United States. And of course, that would make sense. You would want people who are like-minded, who have the same general value system as you do, to come into your country. That makes sense. All of that has been thrown out the window now, mainly in Europe, but we're seeing it in the United States as well. And if Hillary Clinton becomes elected, then the advancement of Islam and most likely Sharia in America will move forward. If Trump is elected, then most likely a lot of that is going to be put to a halt. And according to Breitbart, that is why Donald Trump is getting so much support right now. All right, we are going to stop it there. With all these things in view, we remember that all things work together for good to those who love God. And so we lift our eyes to heaven as we see these things coming to pass, and we trust the Lord that our redemption draweth nigh. Praise God. All right, brethren, that is going to do it for us today. That is our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.